I'm going to give you the 900,000 results and send you home early. So, well, what I'm going to talk about, are you hearing me in the back? Okay. So what I'm going to talk about is an international collaboration that we've in bovine genomics that we've been involved in and that it is continuing. Hopefully it'll be help the industry. So the results I'm going to report on are from three groups that are collaborating. One is the CRC for beef genetic technologies in, from Australia. Another one is a kind of a combined project of the universities of Guelph and Alberta in Canada. And then the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center is also a participant in this. So each of these countries had results, and we agreed to do what we call a meta-analysis on these. And the objective of doing that meta-analysis was to combine the results from the three countries on the bovine SNP50 bead chip associations to increase the power of detecting the associations with production, carcass, and meat traits. If you'll remember back to last year, those of you who were at the meeting last year, I think Mike Goddard said we needed 14,000 observations to do a really good job of estimating these associations with the S&P genetic markers. We don't have that, and we still don't even have that after this collaboration, but it is an attempt to make use of more observations. So each of these collaborators had large populations, relatively large populations of phenotyped animals. They'd also all run the bovine SNP50 chip, genotyping chip on them. The traits included the growth traits, feed intake, carcass traits, and some meat quality traits. We decided to do this that each of the collaborators would retain and analyze their own data. So here's some of the counts of the animals that were included from the three collaborators. At the Meat Animal Research Center, we had the majority of the data, but each of the other two groups added a substantial number to the, and we got up to on the neighborhood of 3,000 observations by combining the forces of three. So the initial steps in doing this was first to have a common interpretation of the chip genotype calls, and that while that seems pretty obvious, it actually was kind of a stumbling block when we started because all three of us had interpreted genotype calls different ways. I think the ones that are coming back to people now are in a more standard basis, at least I hope so, but that's something you have to check because, you know, that if you reverse the direction on an association, that doesn't combine very well with the others. So the other thing we had to do was to try to combine the traits, ones that had a common definition, and some of the traits, the way they were measured, kind of went in opposite directions, so we had to make sure they were pointing the same way, and some of them were measured on completely different scales or different ways, so we had to standardize those in order to combine the results. So the trait kind of divided the traits we've come up with into different trait groups. So the little numbers in parentheses on the top indicate the number of traits. So there were four growth traits, two feed intake traits. There were actually seven carcass traits, but three of those we adjusted to both fat and age endpoints. So that's a total of 10 traits. And then we had two sets of meat tenderness traits. And so some of the traits that we combined, like some people had a marbling score, there were was the U.S. score, there was a Canadian marbling score, there was a intermuscular fat percent from Australia, so somewhat different traits, but kind of trying to measure the same thing, so we combined those. So the calculations and test statistics we did with this, we took the oriented regressions, and other ones that are pointing the same direction, divided those by standard deviation so that the results are all in standard deviation units. We weighted those regressions for each of the SNPs and averaged them. We compared that to a pooled standard error to get a t-test. And then we also did another test for heterogeneity of the regressions by comparing how different the regressions were compared to their standard errors within each of the countries. And that's what we call a Q-test, and some other people that do meta-analysis also call that a Q-test. So when we combine results this way from three different countries, you can get a lot of different kinds of results, and I'll take you through a few of those. Here's kind of what you hope for is a kind of a fortifying result. And this is an actual result from one SNP marker for feed intake. So each country produced a regression. So the regression was on the number of alleles in this one SNP. So an animal has 0, 1, or 2 alleles for that SNP. So this regression indicates for each of this particular allele, it added 0.2 of a standard deviation in feed intake. So in this particular case, we had three kind of similar regression coefficients. This probability is the probability that this would have occurred by chance, which was really, really small for both Mark and Canada. Australia, the probability wasn't that high, but the actual regression value wasn't that different. So when we combined that, we came up with combined regression in standard deviations of about 0.2 and a really low probability that this would have occurred by chance. And then this Q probability we have here is that these probably came from the same distribution, essentially, that they're not any more different than we would expect by chance. So this is kind of an example of a diminishing one, not what we hope for, but what we, of course, expect to get sometimes. And this one, this particular SNP at Mark had a pretty good regression, a pretty good probability. Canada had, a slight negative value, opposite direction. Australia didn't show very much of an effect there. And so when we combined that all, we still came out with a moderate-sized regression, but a reasonable probability, but less probability for combined than we did for one of the best. The best of the probabilities of the three that went in them. And this indicates that there was maybe a little more variation in the SNPs than we would expect by chance, but not a great amount. And here's one that where things look kind of heterogeneous. We get a regression at Mark that was negative, slightly significant. Australia had a strong positive regression with really high probability. Canada was somewhere in the middle there. So when we combined all that, we came out with basically nothing and a really strong indication that something was going on to make them different. So there's lots of things that can make differences between these estimates of SNPs between these particular populations. So one of them is that in the different populations, they're in a different phase with the actual causal variation. it can be an environment by genotype kind of difference there, and can be some from frequency differences in different countries. So there's a number of things that would cause this high probability of being from different kinds of sources, but it doesn't mean that this isn't a place where genotype affects feed intake. So we just can't use it simply to predict in all three countries. So in order to kind of summarize my 900,000 results, I'm going to take you through this explanation of a couple of tables you're going to see here. So these are standard probabilities of 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000, 1 in 10,000, and 1 in 100,000. But when we say that's the probability of getting something that looks significant that isn't, that's for one single SNP. The problem is we're dealing with 50,000 S&P genetic markers. So that says that even at a 1% level, we'll find 500 markers that cross that threshold just by chance. But as we move to 1 in 1,000, that drops to 50. As we move to 1 in 10,000, that drops to 5. And 1 in 100,000, that drops to 0.05. So as an example here, I'm going to say we expected 500 just by chance, but we found 700. So what I'm going to report to you is 1.4. In other words, 40% more than we would expected by chance. If we found 100 in this category and expected 50, we've got twice as many as we expect by chance, and so on. So even though these numbers go up, though, you have to remember that the actual numbers of S&Ps that are identified are still going down. So by category traits, and I'm reporting here at 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000, and 1 in 10,000, I've grouped the four growth traits, the two feed intake traits, the 10 carcass traits, and the two tenderness traits. You can see we found relatively more in the growth traits, but even so, we found, you know, we're identifying genes that are probably true genes, truly have an effect on these various traits. This is always kind of surprising. We actually know where to find some genomic variation for tenderness, but it actually came out, you know, less, you know, the least on this kind of summary. And just for all 18 traits, if we kind of look at heterogeneity, we find a little bit more heterogeneity than between results than we would expect by chance. And a lot of that was in two traits, birth weight and yearling weight, which are the two that surprised me the most. So the results that we've gotten so far are that the proportions of S&P regressions are greater than we would expect by random chance for most traits when you got to probabilities above 0.01. And the heterogeneity statistics slightly exceed the random values, especially for birth and yearling weight. So one of the main reasons for trying to combine these results, get people together, was to increase the power to find the results. So if we want to assume that many S&P have similar associations across genetic backgrounds and environments, then we would expect more S&P to have high probability values in the meta-analysis than in any of the contributing sources. So the next slide is going to try to show that. Just averaged over, I'm only looking now at the 14 traits that don't include the birth, the growth traits. And in those traits, we can see that the marked population found 15 times as many as we would expect by chance. Australia found twice, and Canada found about six times as many as you would expect by chance for these 14 traits. So that was an average of 7.9 times as more times than chance. But in our meta-analysis, then we found 19. So that's not only more so than the average, but more than any of the individual locations that went in there. So averaged across these 14 traits, the meta-analysis identified more S&P than any of the individual sources. So if you remember back to my fortifying example, some combined that were kind of in the same direction and kind of the same size, and they would have resulted in more higher probability results. Some, on the other hand, actually diminished, and that was the second example I show. Of course, a whole bunch of these 50,000 have no real effect in any location. And for the four growth takes, I didn't show those results. It wasn't necessarily true that that we actually found more in the meta-analysis than we did in the MARC data, for instance. And that was also where we found the heterogeneity of results, and so that's probably a reflection of that. So another kind of broader way of trying to look to see if there's correspondence between what's happening in different locations and different populations of cattle is to look at the chromosomes. So I've got the chromosomes numbered from 1 through 29 plus X on the top there, and I took the 50 highest associations from each of the three ones and put them on the chromosome where they came from. So one little thing you need to remember, though, is that chromosome 1 has about twice as many S&P markers on it as chromosome 29. But even so, we find not only a large number of total then on chromosome 1, but each of the locations found a bunch of S&P markers there. And the same way on chromosome 6, that was been mentioned by some other speakers as having a lot going on. So those two chromosomes in this case showed up high, and chromosome 22 actually was relatively high. But we didn't actually find anything on chromosome 2 of at least extremely significant at U.S. MARC. So the overall kind of impression one can get from this is that generally we're identifying some of the same kinds of regions and at least some of the same chromosomes where the variation is located. So the meta-analysis did increase power. We did identify more associations by combining our data. But even though we found more, it's not enough. The prediction that Mike Goddard made last year of needing 14,000 may still hold up to be true. That would be a kind of expensive and difficult hurdle to cross, but there it is. And as some other people mentioned, if we increase the marker density, use the newer chips looking at 850,000 markers instead of 50,000, We think that will help get at some of this, but we don't know for sure. So we have a number of future activities that the collaboration is planning. That includes work around reproductive traits, and one of the other sessions, Milt Thomas was talking about some parts of that. So, you know, that one will be more between Australia, U.S. Neonatal Research Center, and New Mexico State. Another thing we are planning to do is to look, instead of looking at just single S&P associations, is to look at prediction equations derived in each of the three countries, and then perhaps compare it against either each other's country or against the results from the 2000 Bull Project. And we plan to also use these higher density 850K chips in these populations. There are plans to do that. We won't need to genotype everything again. We think we can do this with just a relatively small number of animals regenotyped with the higher density chips and do what they call imputing, which is just extending that to the rest of the populations. Another thing we have been talking about and will probably be doing soon is to select some bulls that have common interests among the three countries and actually sequence those bulls. Another big thing we've been doing is trying to determine other groups of people and populations of cattle that have 50K who would like to participate in this kind of work. So I'll end it up a little early here and wish you all safe travels. And I'll take questions, though, if you have any. Yes?
You showed the bar graphs where you showed the number. What does it look like if you line up the Manhattan plots from the three different groups or create bins?
Yeah.
Things like that.
I haven't done it. Our Australian partners had tried that in one megabyte comparisons, and I mean the general result, I haven't seen the actual results, but they generally said that really didn't seem to help them too much.